Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas, ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we are going to be doing our third annual best and worst of the year, meaning these are the best and worst of 2021, according to us, the Film Posers. So, let's just get right into it. You've listened to our old episodes. Hopefully, you know the gist of it. If not, let's go. So we are going, each poser is going to give their top 10 best of the year. The first five are just going to be mentions. And there will probably be honorable mentions because 2021 was a good year for cinema.
Finally.
So the first five, we're just going to mention them. And then the final top five, we can go a little bit more into detail, but we're going to be starting with our worst picks because that's what you love to hear. And we're going to be giving our top five worst films of the year. And we're going to be starting off with Anna. Take it away.
Oh, boy. So the first movie I'm going to mention is a movie that we saw and we reviewed. And it's called The Protégé. First of all, what the movie was
about? Waiting to see if this was gonna get mentioned.
I had it on my list.
I left it because I knew.
It gave me Stale Cookie vibes, you know.
Ay, cuando la Oreo están pa ma.
Ah, sí, las Ritz. Cuando se van las Ritz.
Oh, it's a stale snack.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
It is messy. It is unmemorable. What even was that movie? Because the plot, I don't know her.
Neither did the film.
Yeah, we saw the whole movie and we still don't know what happened.
Exacto.
I just blocked that movie out of my memory after our review, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it's unmemorable.
It's that. Oh my God.
And that one scene, I'm sorry, there's that one scene towards the end that was just in such poor taste that it was just like, y'all just couldn't write a good script. You just had to go that far.
So it was poor taste. It was in the name of shock value. And the thing is, the director, he was the one that did Casino Royale. So we expected a little bit, you know what, taste. But no, ¿qué es esto?
And Casino Royale is like my favorite Bond movie. Jesus.
And let's not forget, he dragged poor Maggie Q into this.
Oh, poor Maggie. It was a good cast.
It was.
I feel bad for everyone involved because it's a good cast.
But let's be honest. You guys said this comes from the director of Casino Royale. This also comes from the director of Green Lantern.
He said variety.
Range.
He said, I'm Range. Giving you versatility. I am giving you variety. I'm giving you levels.
The next film, it is another one we watched and we reviewed, and it is called Chaos Walking. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry.
That was young adult realness. How
exactly,
dare you?
Exactly. Exactly.
That is not YA real. That was YA realness from 2010.
Hey, back in 2010, we would have ate that shit up.
I would have ate that shit up in 2018. But you know, it was, it's 5 years late.
We know. I still ate later, it up.
It is later to the party than any Puerto Rican who said they'll be there at 7 p.m. and arrive at 11.
You know how frustrating that movie was when I watched my man, Mads Mikkelsen, being not used in a good film.
He got that check, though.
He got the check, Anna. He got the Lionsgate check.
Potential. I didn't saw his range in this movie.
No, what's worse, he stole J-Lo's coat from Hustlers.
Verdad.
He stole that poor woman's coat. He couldn't have stolen Judi Dench's from Cats.
Oh my God, not Cats.
Not Cats. Mira, esa película lacked substance. It was a very anticlimactic third act. And you know what's frustrating? That third act is like leaves you with an open ending that, you know, probably there's going to be a second one. but it's not.
I want someone to believe in me the way they believe they're getting a second film. I really do.
Man.
The third film. It's a movie we also watch and review. Wow.
Oh.
Wow. It is called The Woman in the Window.
Anna came with, like, no mercy today.
No mercy. Okay, and the fact is that my parents today, they were watching that movie, and I asked them, do you guys liked it? And they said yes. I was like, ma'am.
I think as your daughter, you kind of let them down by not stopping them.
Were going to like it, and they actually liked it. And I was like, you know what? I pretend I do not see.
Oh, my God.
What you just said. But the point is, my girl, Amy Adams, really needs another agent, okay? That woman is suffering with bad after bad movies. Why? Why do you do that?
Then dear Evan Hansen. Rough year for Amy.
Oh my God. It is a rough year for her.
But next year she's got Disenchanted.
The only thing keeping me going.
She's just here collecting that check after check. I gotta say, this was one of my favorite reviews that I edited.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've definitely seen this review a few times because it's very funny.
I had fun editing it. And for the audience that don't know, we were reading Letterboxd comments.
Available now on the Film Posers YouTube channel.
Check it out.
If you have not seen it, please watch it. The review, not the movie.
It saved yourself some time. The review's better.
Fourth movie. I'm kind of annoyed that I paid for this.
Oh my God.
Because it was a movie that was on streaming service and I still pay for it. Ay, Dios mío. It's called Red Notice. Mira.
Anna. You paid. Anna.
Pay for it.
Anna.
Mira, I was tempted to pay for it. I'm not going to lie.
Oh my God, Anna. I'm so sorry.
Backstory was, I was hanging out with a friend that I haven't seen in a long while, and we wanted to go to the movies, and the only movie that I haven't watched was Red Notice, and I was like, okay, fine, and Mama, what is this? What is this movie?
You couldn't go watch Eternals again?
Anna, I am so sorry.
What kind of trio is this?
No chemistry whatsoever. Yes. No flavor. No. None at all.
No flavor. The
terrible
jokes.
Acting on all three parts.
The jokes, they were even that funny.
Damn,
knew what was gonna happen. I kind of predicted the first and second half. Now the third one, that really put the cherry on top with that twist. I was like, you know what? I am done. I want to levantarme e irme. But I couldn't, you know?
And a movie ticket is like a full hour of work.
Exacto. Okay, for the sake of one, I'm probably not going to spoil this movie if you still want to watch it.
Honestly, I kind of do. Okay, I'm not going to lie.
But I'm just going to say, ese twist was really dumb. The chemistry wasn't there. I didn't like the movie. It wasn't funny. And apparently it had a really big budget.
Yeah. I think it's like their most expensive movie that they've ever made, apparently.
Exactly. So, yeah. Nolan is quaking, okay? No. Last movie. I didn't watch it, but I'm still going to mention it because it is one of the worst movies out there. And it's called Music. No explanation needed.
Yes. Fully with you.
Just why?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yes, fully agree.
Why did he even have nominations in the Golden Globes? I don't know.
A dark time.
A very dark period. So, no explanation needed.
No.
My last one.
No. Excellent choice.
Next up, Juan. What are your worst picks of 2021?
Who, me? Wow, you know, so many options. First off, Anna, really great list.
Anna was saying that she didn't have, like, she was having a hard time picking. And I'm here like, I'm having a hard time narrowing it down.
Honestly, yeah, it was difficult to narrow down. And I was very surprised that He's All That did not make the list. But to be fair, I kind of liked it. I will say, Anna, I'm a little shocked that you did not include The Kissing Booth 3, but I was not sure if you saw it or not.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, good. You chose self-love this year. Good job. Oh, love that.
I watched it.
There you go. We'll be seeing that movie on the list very soon. So, my number 5 pick, I know no one here has seen it. And I took the bullet for God knows why. Now, this movie stars Andrew Garfield, and I'm going to put a disclaimer. The problem here was not Andrew Garfield, but what they had him do in one scene is quite really messed up.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's called Mainstream, directed by Gia Coppola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how bad it is that Jake Paul is in a scene in a movie? And the movie's still worse than his inclusion. Like, okay, as great as Andrew Garfield is in this performance, it wasn't enough to save the movie. I think it doesn't offer anything new, nothing exciting to say about the subject. You know, it talks about social media influencers, and quite frankly, it's really late to the conversation. Like, this conversation's been had. We've already talked about it. We've already discussed about the dangers of going too far. And then this guy just does some really fucking weird shit throughout the movie. Like, the characters are unlikable, but I'm not gonna lie, the actors are pretty good at portraying those unlikable characters. The story's not satisfying. It comes off as really pretentious. Like, it's just so outdated that the can't feel impactful, and it leaves this sour taste in your mouth, and it makes you want to click the dislike and unsubscribe buttons. Quite frankly, it's just a huge just like skip it. I rented it. I thought it looked interesting. I was helping Andrew Garfield secure the bag. Do I regret it? Absolutely. Not helping Andrew Garfield. I mean, watching the movie. We'll always support Andrew Garfield.
To see it.
Well, Anna. Don't. So anyway, moving on, my number 4, I saw this at South by Southwest, and it's called How It Ends.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like, how can you have a comedy with zero jokes that land? Like, you have more celebrity cameos than you do jokes. Like, yes. How is that possible? And you know how bad your movie is? That this is about a meteor going to crush the earth, and you're out there spending the last days of your life running into whoever celebrity friend of yours you could get in your film. And yet I'm still rooting for your meteor to like end the movie as quickly as it can.
This is foreshadowing for Don't Look Up.
Let me tell you something, they should have kept looking down in this film because I was tired. I was, like, tired. It doesn't have genuine emotions. It could have been a really feel-good apocalyptic comedy. But, you know, again, no comedic timing, no jokes. And you have some pretty fucking funny people in this cast. So for them to not have any jokes says a lot about your screenplay.
I remember it had a full festival run, and I saw it, none of them. Because everyone kept saying it was bad.
It was so boring.
It was terrible. It's only like 90 minutes and it feels like 4 hours.
Yup. It's that miniseries you just wish would end, but it's only 90 minutes. And that's the worst part. It's a terrible 90 minute movie. Well timed, as we all know. Mm-hmm. The 90 minute sweet spot hits differently. But when your 90 minute film sucks, there's no saving it. There really is no saving it. So How It Ends, bootleg Don't Look Up. I haven't seen Don't Look Up, but I'm just going to take the film poster's word for it and use that quote. And, well, How It Ends, you root for the meteor. That's how it ends.
Oh, yeah.
So my 3rd pick, we've reviewed on the channel, and I have an infamous quote on that review where I claim to say, Mama, this is garbage, as my opening quote for this film. And that is Chirk, also known as Carrie.
Ah, Chirk.
Chirk.
Listen, I appreciate Tom Holland going outside of his comfort zone, giving his all. At one point, you have a camera going up a certain area we don't need to discuss here.
Cinema.
I had a joke about this, but I don't know if it's too far, so I'm just going to skip it. Tom Holland, I'm so sorry that you broke your back carrying this film. And they tried to push it for the Oscars. And again, I wish someone would believe in me. The way they believed that Cherry could get a Best Picture nomination. Like, really? Where's my support? The film has a terrible script. The story, boring. It's really fucking boring. I didn't feel anything when it was supposed to be profound moments. It had better advertisement. The trailer was better than the movie itself. And quite frankly, it's kind of hard to sit through. It's a little graphic, but quite frankly, it's hard to sit through because you don't really see a silver lining headed your way. You don't see that light at the end of the tunnel being like, ah, yes, we're going to get to a good film. You see the light of the tunnel because you know it's ending and you're ready for the credits.
Tom Holland needed to go to a chiropractor because he carried the whole movie.
Absolutely. And I hope he got the best one. But you know what? Let's applaud Tom Holland for one thing. To go from making Cherry to being with the icon known as Zendaya. Let me tell you something. That is how you change your career around. You are known from the guy who was starring in Cherry to Spider-Man dating his MJ. And I don't know how Uncharted's going to do. Because I don't think I can support that. I don't think I can hope for that for him, quite honestly. We all saw Cherry here. We all know the deal.
It was torture. It's so long.
So Cherry, on Apple TV Plus, if you get a new iPhone and you have Apple TV for a while, I highly recommend that you watch anything that isn't Cherry.
Ted Lasso.
Next up, I'm going to start my notes apology tour for a certain film poster in the group.
I do.
Oh my god.
And the film that is number two at my worst of the year is Malignant by James Wan.
Ay, eso me dolió.
Mira, por lo menos no fue número uno. To the six people who voted on Twitter that I should have watched this film because I ran a poll. What did I do to y'all to deserve this punishment? I hated.
You understand the camp.
No, mama, I know camp. Listen, you've seen what's in my top four Letterboxd. The concept of camp has been grasped. Malignant was not camp. You know what camp that was? That was the sequel to Camp Crystal Lake, pero peor.
Oh my god, why?
And listen, Friday the 13th slaps, but Camp Crystal Lake, this was body count. She was there. The violence was too much for me. So much so that it took me out of the story. And that story, it just didn't work for me. And this is very much a divisive film where either you like it or you hate it. And I'm on team hate. Quite frankly, there was nothing I could really like about the movie. It kept showing like those bones snapping, which is one of the things I don't like to see on my screen. Things going into eyes, another thing I hate to see. Malignant just had everything I hate to see in a horror film. So this felt like it was meant to attack me. I'm glad I saw it on HBO Max, because I'll be really honest with y'all. If I had to see this in a theater, deadass, I would have walked out. For sure. There was no doubt about it. I would have walked out. I wouldn't have finished Malignant. Thankfully, HBO Max let me skip ahead a couple of scenes because I just couldn't watch it after a while. I skipped a lot of the violence. And to those who like Malignant, I'm so happy for you. I really am. But that could never be me.
Yeah, I was going to put it in mind, but I had to narrow down my list. I knew someone would do God's work. So it's fine.
You're welcome.
I'm hurting.
Listen, I could have been a lot meaner to this film. And that's why it's my second worst film of the year. Not the dope part, but my entire reason. My worst film of 2021. No one here has seen it. Another film I sacrificed myself by watching. For some reason, I thought it would be an interesting idea to revisit the first Don't Breathe. Then I regretted that idea, but I had already made it past that far. So of course, my worst film of the year is Don't Breathe 2. Or as I call it, stop breathing life into this franchise. Because this is garbage. This made me want to apologize to Malignant for a quick second. In every film I watch, I try to find one thing to like about it. Even Malignant with the red lighting. So imagine how much I hated Don't Breathe 2. That there is nothing I like about this film. The script is terrible. The story is terrible. The way it's trying to redeem that old man after he does what he does in the first film and make him like the character you have to kind of root for because it's like the lesser of all evils. Honestly, I wanted to tap out after the first 25 minutes, but I finished it just to be like, maybe I'll find something to like. Nope, nothing. They almost, they killed a dog in this movie. That's another thing I hate when they do. And they did it. And they almost killed two. That's when I was like, yeah, this is not for me. I hate this here. But then I was like, wait, I need a worst film of 2021. Let's finish this. They made this. Okay, one more thing about Don't Breathe 2 and I'm done. This old man in the first film, it was believable that he was blind. And that he had trouble doing those things. But he still made sold the action scenes. This film, he is everyone at AARP's dream. The way he is doing those action scenes like he could see. The man could practically see everyone and he was blind.
Not AARP.
That was AARP. That man defended his home. Como si nada. Took those people out. Como si nada. They were younger.
Is Daredevil shaking?
Baby Daredevil is sending a cease and desist. My review of Don't Breathe 2 is funny. Is better than this movie. Honestly. Just don't bother wasting your time with it. If you enjoyed it. How? Genuinely. How? I would like to tell you there's a good film in here, but I'd be lying to you. There is no good film in here.
Well, I am so sorry you had to go through that one.
Thank you.
And now we're going to pass it over to Gabriela.
Okay. So a lot of the films that posters have mentioned have also been on my list. So I'm just going to mention ones that have not been mentioned. And starting with the one that is literally last on my Letterboxd, The Little Things, directed by John Lee Hancock.
Which one did that one again?
Oh my God, the Jared Leto. The Jared Leto was nominated for a Golden Globe.
I was going to say you had to be a little more specific with Jared Leto, but now I remember.
Starring Denzel Washington and Rami Malek.
Oh my God, the Paycheck movie. Yeah. I remember that. The Paycheck
movie. Listen. Like, I'm still scarred by how many nominations Jared Leto received for this movie. Why? How? Like, he was terrible. The entire time he was walking as if he was constipated. And he just had his eyes widened the entire time as if he were the freaking Phantom of the Opera. I don't know. And yeah, it's just a terrible movie. Like, the mystery's not intriguing. It's supposed to be a murder mystery, but it's just not intriguing. You really don't... It doesn't really pull you in. It's just very boring. And yeah, it's very long as well. It clocks in at over 2 hours. Yeah, and you feel it. And I just have such a funny story because my brother actually paid to watch this movie in theaters, and he came back from the movie and just complained for like 30 minutes about how terrible it was. And then I informed him that it was on HBO Max, and that just made him angrier because he could have saved himself the money. Next up on my list is this Netflix movie that I have not heard anyone talk about, so I'm gonna talk about it. It's called The Last Letter from Your Lover. Now, this movie had everything. It's a romance about two people who were in love and then lost each other, and the people and this journalist in the present wants to, you know, find them and reunite them. It has everything. Like, I love that shit. Give me that. And it's terrible. It's really boring. There was zero chemistry between the the leads, both like the present couple and the past couple, they had zero chemistry, and you know that's key in a romance. And yeah, I apparently it's like an adaptation from a book. Apparently, I'm not sure, but it just, again, it was not engaging. It was also very long. Yeah, I was very disappointed by this one because I was looking forward to it. And then my last mention is one that Anna and I saw. It's called In the Earth.
Ay, Dios mío, verdad.
I have not forgotten about this movie. I should start charging it rent. Because, goddamn, every time I remember it, it makes me mad.
Mira, a mí se me olvidó esa película.
Mira. La pusieron en Hulu, by the way.
I saw.
No, I'm not rewatching that.
I'm not going to
They're giving that film away.
It's frustrating, Juan. It was very frustrating. It's
terrible. We have been trying to figure out what the point of this movie was since we saw it. And we still don't know what happened.
Exacto. I don't even know how to explain the last scene.
It's just like a strobe light show. Yeah. Literalmente. Están como que, oh, the creature that lives in the forest. And I remember telling Anna, if a monster pops up, I'm going to give it 3 stars. No monster pops up. It's just a strobe light show.
They should have done like a warning, because man, that scene could have caused an epilepsy.
Oh yeah, full. And yeah, those are the 3 movies that I am very mad about. There are many more, but those are just the ones that annoy me the most.
I thought you were going to mention a certain film.
Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah. She hasn't seen it.
I haven't seen it, so I can't mention it. But I'm sure that if I had seen it, because I refuse to put myself through it, it would have made my list.
Por eso.
I thought you were just going to mention it just because you hated seeing the advertisement.
Yeah, you know, I hate, like, everyone who listens to the podcast knows that I hate Dear Evan Hansen. So, yes, honorable mention, Dear Evan Hansen. I haven't seen it, but it will likely make the list. Very likely. Extremely likely. Oh, and another honorable mention, West Side Story.
No, it's my turn.
Go, Josie, go!
So these are in order. Least to most. So let's start off at number 5 with Chirk.
So
we've already talked about it. It is directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, a.k.a. the Russo brothers. More or less, Cherry drifts from college dropout to army medic in Iraq, anchored only by his true love, Emily. But after returning from the war with PTSD, his life spirals into drugs and crime as he struggles to find his place in the world. And it just could have been better. The directing was really off-putting. Tom Holland was good. But ultimately, just the story didn't feel like it contributed anything to the conversation about how war veterans are treated when they come back. And how they do not get support in, specifically in the United States. It's just more, like, instead of criticizing it, it felt like they were, ¿cuál la palabra? It came to the point where it felt like more gratuitous for shock value. So that is my number 5. I'm not going to go into it as much. You can check out our review on our YouTube channel. As for my number 4, I did not finish this movie. I made it halfway through. It's 2 hours long, and that is too long. I'm a 90-minute gal, but I can't tolerate long films. Despite what's happening right now with the discourse again, like long films, whatever, Twitter, you guys are bored. Go touch some grass. 90-minute flicks are better, but we can talk about that another day. Being the Ricardos, I could not finish it. Aaron Sorkin, what are you doing? This film follows Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz as they face a crisis that could end their careers and another that could end their marriage. It's out of whack. There is no substance to it. It literally feels like bland mashed potatoes, let me tell you. There is no butter here. There is no salt. There's nothing. It's just a potato. It's not even mashed. It's just a potato. not even their acting, because Javier Bardem was actually good, despite the fact that, to me, he's kind of low-key and brown-faced, not gonna lie. He looks darker in the film. They probably tanned him. Yeah. But that's just my observation. Nobody else has made this accusation, so I'm just gonna throw it out there and you guys discern. But it's not really whether they look like it or not, because that's what most people were worried about. It's not even that. It's just a boring film. As simple as that. Also, just nothing happens. It feels like they're leading up to so many things and nothing really happens. But I digress. My number three is The Hand of God, directed by Paolo Sorrentino. And it follows in 1980s Naples. Young Fabietto pursues his love for football as a family tragedy strikes, shaping his uncertain but promising future as a filmmaker. I'm not going to go into in depth. I thought it was beautifully shot. The cinematography, etc. This is someone that definitely knows what they want to capture and how to capture it. But you can tell that this is a personal story because it doesn't have a connecting thread. Everything is just memory. It feels like looking at a person's memories. It's disjointed. There's heart to it at times, but most of it is overshadowed by gratuitous sexuality that kind of was off-putting for me, especially because, trigger warning, there is a statutory rape scene, and I do understand this is biographical, but it was the first time I ever wanted to walk out of a screening, and maybe that's just me, but it felt very discomforting, especially because it was an old woman with our young protagonist, and it's just, yeah, if you've seen it, you know. So, fair warning for that. My number two is a film I saw at the Cannes Film Festival, and that is Benedetta by Paul Verhoeven. And it follows in the late 17th century with plague ravaging the land. Benedetta Carlini joins the convent in Pescia, Tuscany, as a novice. Capable from an early age of performing miracles, Benedetta's impact on life in the community is immediate and momentous. This had no purpose in my life, and it has no purpose in cinema, but that's just me. A lot of people love it. I respect you. I think it's a gratuitous exploration of female sexuality through the male gaze. It participates in the mutilation and abuse of the female body for a spectacle. And yeah, I just did not like her as a character, which I do know that characters don't have to be morally correct, but you never really know her true motivation, so it's just hard to connect with her. Also, the relationship was super freaking toxic, and they were both very manipulative, and it's just weird. And yes, the humor did get me at times, but overall, it's just, it doesn't contribute anything to the conversation. It's just Verhoeven being Verhoeven. Now, my number one. Is Licorice Pizza by Paul Thomas Anderson. This is my worst film of the year. Set in the San Fernando Valley in the 1970s, the film follows a high school student who is also a successful child actor. I can see how a lot of people might love this. It's a romanticization of the 70s while also criticizing the turmoil of the United States government and society as a whole, trying to live under the American dream while also existing with the fast-paced nature of how nothing really stays. The cinematography, again, is nice. It's delicious. There are some themes and motifs that you're like, ah. But I can't get over the age gap, and I can't get over the racist scenes, because you're trying to justify scenes, and sure, some people aren't bothered by it, but it really contributes nothing to the story, so I just really don't understand the necessity. But as for the age gap, I couldn't get over it. It's just weird, because I'm 25, and I'm just like, I wouldn't do this. This is weird. If the age had been different, this could have worked.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I just can't get over this.
How are we on the same minds with the criticism?
We talked about that in our review.
Yeah, in our in-depth review, we literally talked about that exact thing, that the racism wasn't even necessary. I think we pulled up the same interview. Yeah. The same interview PTA did about how he tried to justify including that scene in there with the racism.
Yeah, because he's like, oh yeah, I think my wife's Japanese, blah blah blah, and I'm like, that literally feels like when you're like, but my friend's black.
Eso mismo.
Paul Thomas Anderson, shut up. Con mucho respeto.
But it's a poor excuse. Again, if you're writing, it contributes nothing to the story. Therefore, it is unnecessary. Therefore, you do not need it. It does not push forward Gary's story at all. We already know that his mom works for these different restaurants and companies. And, like, we see it later when they're running the Soggy Bottom mattress thing. So we didn't need that scene. And then it's just a constant gag that literally contributes nothing. And just Gary is just a horrible person. I'm sorry if you guys identify with him, because I know a lot of people that do. And yeah, I'm sure you also probably love Ted from How I Met Your Mother, but this is some otro 20 peso. I'm going to stop roasting.
And if if our listeners want to hear a devil's advocate version of a review for Licorice Pizza, check out our YouTube channel. We literally did what Josie just said and what we tried to balance out from Twitter. That was an interesting discussion, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, because I also don't think Alana Haim fue la gran cosa. She was good, pero, I mean, yeah. It's just her acting with her family.
Which, by the way, Soggy Bottoms being the original name for this film, that I don't know. I think we felt that the film would have been better if it would have been called Soggy Bottoms.
I actually think it's better for them changing it, because it romanticizes what's going on. If you left it Soggy Bottom, it just emphasizes how wrong this is.
Mm-hmm.
In a non-romantic way. So it's more strategic than anything. But again, eso es otro 20. I'm going to stop roasting. Those are my top 5 worst films of the year. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. And we're back. And now we are going to be talking about actual good cinema, some good soup. We're going to be getting into our top 10 best films of the year. And let's go reverse. I'm going to give you my top 10. So starting off with my 10th pick, it's another Cannes film. And it is Titan. Which it used to be higher. I bumped it down. So if anyone remembers my old list that I posted a while ago, it has been bumped down from number 3 to number 10. I know, sad. If you don't know what Titan is, it is directed by Julia Ducournau. Following a series of unexplained crimes, a former firefighter is reunited with his son who has been missing for 10 years. That literally tells you nothing, but that's all you need to know. My number 9. Con mucho respeto, elogio y amor y apreciación. It is Barb and Star Go to Vista del Mar, directed by Josh Greenbaum.
Yay! The Barb and Star representation.
The story of best friends Barb and Star, who leave their small western town for the first time to go on vacation in Vista del Mar, Florida, where they soon find themselves tangled up in adventure, love, and a villain's evil plot to kill everyone in town. It is great. This is peak comedy. It should be nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture. Fight me. My number 8 is Encanto, directed by Byron Howard and Jared Bush. And, of course, the tale of an extraordinary family, the Madrigals, who live hidden in the mountains of Colombia, in a magical house, in a vibrant town, in a wondrous, charmed place called an Encanto. The magic of Encanto has blessed every child in the family with a unique gift, from super strength to the power to heal every child except one. Mirabel. But when she discovers that the magic surrounding the Encanto is in danger, Mirabel decides that she, the only ordinary Madrigal, might just be her exceptional family's last hope. Lovely film. Bumped it up. It was actually my number 9. Sorry, Barb and Star. I just was sobbing watching Dos Oruguitas again, and I'm like, maybe it does have rights. My number 7 is, surprise, surprise, another Disney project, and that is Luca. It should be higher, but this is a very tough year, so please respect my privacy at this time. Everyone knows Luca, but just in case, directed by Enrico Casarosa, two young boys experience an unforgettable Italian summer filled with gelato, pasta, and endless scooter rides. But all the fun is threatened by a deeply held secret. They are sea monsters from another world just below the water surface. I don't care what people say about this film. It is gay.
It now. Is gay.
Now, my number 6 is the best animated film of the year, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, directed by Michael Rianda.
You know, a quirky dysfunctional family's road trip is upended when they find themselves in the middle of the robot apocalypse and suddenly become humanity's unlikeliest last hope. 3.9 on Letterboxd, it says something. The Golden Globes have no taste, have no rights. We knew this already, but what the heck? Yeah, The Mitchells vs. the Machines is a really great film and you should watch it. And now for my top five. Okay.
Josie, get to us. Why are you laughing like a villain?
Her number five is going to be licorice pizza.
Duality. Juxtaposition and all.
Exactly.
My number five is... Y'all thought it wasn't going to be here, huh? Y'all out there listening. You thought this wasn't going to be here, but who am I? I am Josie Marie. So my number five is Eternals, directed by Chloe Zhao.
Of course.
If you don't know, the Eternals are a team of ancient aliens who have been living on Earth in secret for thousands of years. When an unexpected tragedy forces them out of the shadows, they are forced to reunite against mankind's most ancient enemy, the Deviants. This film should be more in the talks for Best Picture than No Way Home because No Way Home falls into the MCU formula while Eternals is its own thing. But No Way Home was also good, so this isn't slander. I'm just saying. I think we can have both. Pero la gente no está ready para esa conversación. Ya estamos en esas. I've talked about this film everywhere, so I'm not going to go in depth other than Icarus is toxic and that's good. We love a toxic king. It's great. Disney Plus, January 12th. Stream it. Also, if anyone wants to gift me the DVD copy from Target, that edition is lovely. I'll put it on a wish list or something. Thank you. My number four is The Tragedy of Macbeth, directed by Joel Cohen. Macbeth, the Thane of Glen receives a prophecy from a trio of witches that one day he will become king of Scotland. Consumed by ambition and spurred action by his wife, Macbeth murders his king and takes the throne for himself. We love this film. It is delicious. Yes. It is exquisite. We have a review on our YouTube channel. You can watch it. We love it. I am an English major, therefore I saw God. God came to me in the theater, put his hand on my shoulder and said, child, you are about to experience cinema. In cinema, I experienced. This is like tasting a good chocolate cake for the first time. This is like trying pizza for the first time as an infant. You are a wee child and someone just held a pizza slice to your lips. And you tasted the nectar of the gods. This is what film is all about. This is why we go to the movies. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this. In conclusion, Tragedy of Macbeth is in my top 10 of the year. Muchísimas gracias y buenas noches. Now we're getting into the good stuff. The delicioso. Number three. Because I love this man with all my heart. And I'm glad he's having a renaissance because we've been here in the trenches defending his honor. And that is Tick, Tick, Boom, directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who definitely deserves a Best Director conversation, but we're not. It's a Best Director nomination, but we're not ready for that conversation. So, on the cusp of his 30th birthday, a promising young theater composer navigates love, friendship, and the pressures to create something great before time runs out. If you like Hamilton, you'll like this. It is perfect for Lin-Manuel. It's definitely, like, you can tell that it was made by a theater lover because it's in every frame, every shot, as opposed to West Side Story. Sorry, Steven Spielberg. It was very cinematic, but the way that Lin handles this, you can tell that he's been raised with theater and he knows how to capture it. And he's done his time. He shadowed John M. Shu during In the Heights to prepare himself to take on this project. He's been wanting it for a long time. He fought for it. He got it. And le doy su flore. I think he did a good job for a first timer. And Andrew Garfield is great. I'm glad he's getting best actor talk. I wish Robin De Jesus were more in that conversation because he was great. And it's just a terrific film that is perfect for writers and theater lovers all alike. It's just a good time. And the music is catchy. And yeah, Jonathan Larson was gone from us too soon. I had a hard time with these two. I switched them back and forth for a long time, which will shock you because people know what my top film of the year was. It was that for the longest time.
What?
So for me, bumping these two up and down for this episode for the longest time and having an existential crisis sitting in the corner eating cake. Yes.
I can't believe this is going to happen.
What?
So my second film, favorite film of the year, the best of the best, the second best film on my list is Come On, Come On by Mike Mills. You were almost my number one.
Oh my God.
This is the twist I was not expecting. I thought it was going to go another way.
You had us for a moment.
You were almost my number one, Come On, Come On, which would have been, I think... I didn't do it because I really feel like a crack on the earth would have sprouted out. Okay, and Puerto Rico would have started again.
Probably.
Alguien toca madera. Espera. Gracias.
So, my number two is Come On, Come On, directed by Mike Mills, a documentary filmmaker whose latest project involves gifted children bonds with his smart yet sensitive nephew, whose father struggles with bipolar disorder is in the grips of a manic episode. 4.2 on Letterboxd, that people have taste. The Academy probably won't because I don't see this getting nominated. I hope it does. Critics' Choice and the Golden Globes are paying it dust. But it is a great film. Please watch it. It is vanilla existential crisis in the best way. It is delightful. It is tender. It is soft-hearted. It'll make you cry. It is an exploration of life in its most beautiful, wonderful, simplest forms. And the relationships that we should not take for granted. And my number one is Shiva Baby by Emma Seligman. Estoy cerrando el año con broche de oro. Muchísimas gracias. Buenas noches. Los quiero mucho. Adios.
Bravo.
Yeah, what else to say? Shiva Baby is great. I watched it on the plane last night, and y'all are gonna be like, why are you watching a film about anxiety? It's like, I'm watching Shiva Baby. I'm not watching Uncut Gems. I love myself. So it's baby anxiety. It's still good. And you know what's gonna happen. At least I know what's gonna happen. I rewatched it a lot of times. I'm just vibing, eating my Cheez-Its, watching shit go down. It's great. It's delightful. Anyways, next up, Gabriela.
Yay. Okay, so starting with my number 10, The Matrix Resurrections. Does this surprise anyone? Absolutely not. I have been waiting for this movie since it was announced back in 2019, and I have seen it 3 times. And I love every minute of it. Because I am very happy with this movie because it was the movie that Lana Wachowski wanted to make. And you can tell that she finally got to do what she always wanted to do with this project, because when the original trilogy came out, Warner Brothers, you know, forced her and Lily to tone down on a lot of stuff. And in this movie, you know, she did what she wanted to do. And she even flips the bird at Warner Brothers in the movie. And it's hilarious. And yeah, it was so, I don't know, it was kind of like when seeing Neo and Trinity again, like top 10 cinema moments, I swear. It was great. I loved it. I loved how meta it was. And for everyone who says that it doesn't make sense, like, when has The Matrix ever made sense? The Matrix trilogy is a lot. There's a lot of layers to it, and not a lot of it makes sense. You know, everyone has their own interpretation of it, and that's what this movie is as well. You have your own interpretation of it. You know, some just see it as a love story. Some just see it, you know, kind of like as a restart of The Matrix, and it kind of like it undoes what happened in Revolutions. It's a lot, and a lot of people have their own version of it, and you know what? That's fine, but it's a great movie, and it still feels like the original trilogy. It fits with it perfectly, even though it obviously has a lot of modern takes. So I think it's a great addition to the Matrix universe. And yes, it's my favorite sequel of the year. Next up, a movie that gave me an existential crisis and I need it to be released already so that I can make it my personality trait, The Worst Person in the World, directed by Joachim Trier. I love this movie. Josie and I watched it at the New York Film Festival, and oh my god, it hit hard. It hit so hard to me after I finished watching it, and I absolutely loved it, and I can't wait to rewatch it. Next up, Tick Tick Boom. Again, it's my favorite musical of the year. I have the soundtrack on repeat constantly. Absolutely fantastic. Next up, The Tragedy of Macbeth. Everything that Josie described when she talked about it. Yes, fully agree. This film was a religious experience. It was like being taken to church. So yes, and the cinematography is spectacular. Next, I have The Mitchells versus The Machines, which, what hasn't been said about this movie? It's incredible. And fuck the Golden Globes. Like, how dare you look at all the animated films that came out this year and be like, yeah, The Mitchells and The Machines is just not worthy of a nomination. Like, what the hell, man? Have you seen this movie? I don't understand. And now, get into the good stuff. We get into the top five. Number five, Coda, directed by Sean Heder. I saw this film at Sundance, and it has remained in my top five of the year since Sundance. So it's a beautiful film, and we've talked about it a lot. Again, there's a review up. We have been very vocal about our love for this film, and it's just incredible. And I'm glad that the Golden Globes recognized it and that it's being recognized and not fully ignored during award season, because it is a beautiful film that deserves all the love. Next up, Dune. Are we surprised? I don't think we are. I waited for this movie for a long time as well, and I have rewatched it too many times, and yes, I love this film. There's a review up on our YouTube channel where we go into more. There's two reviews up, actually, on our YouTube channel where we go into detail. So if you want to hear more about our thoughts, you can go and watch those. But yes, Dune, a religious experience. Let me tell you, the cinematography, the score. Denis Villeneuve knows what he's doing when he makes sci-fi. That man knows his craft. So yes, Dune. And then my number three, The Power of the Dog, directed by Jane Campion. What can I say about this film other than I was 15 minutes in and I was like, yep, this is 5 stars. Yes. Yes. It's very, I love Jane Campion. She's one of my favorite directors. And this film was very different from what she has made. And after seeing it, I have declared it my favorite Jane Campion film, which is a lot to say, because my favorite Jane Campion film for the longest time has been Bright Star. So putting it above Bright Star was a lot. But I loved it. Her directing is stunning, per usual. The score is amazing. Johnny Greenwood, who also did the score for Spencer. And he knows what he's doing. He's like, it's a great score, and I loved the performances. And even though, like, Cody McPhee was the one getting a lot of buzz, you know, I think Benedict Cumberbatch was the best actor of the bunch. Yeah, it's a good film. I know a lot of people don't like it, and I can see why. But I really liked it, and the ending was great, and what can I say? I love stories about toxic families. Next up, The Green Knight, directed by David Lowery, which we also have a review up on our YouTube channel. And what can I say about The Green Knight that has not been said other than nominated for Best Cinematography, you cowards? What are you waiting for? It's right there. it's a perfect film. It's right there, and they're paying it dust.
Which it's not a perfect film, but it does have nice cinematography.
And yes, I love The Green Knight. I went through something watching this movie, and I love it so much. And yeah, nominated for Best Cinematography, you cowards. And my number one film is Titan, directed by Julia Ducournau. I did not expect to love this movie as much as I did, let me tell you. I cried at the end and everything. It was a lot, and especially considering how I was very disturbed by Raw. So I was scared, to say the least, to go into this film, but I loved it. And ever since I watched it, I put it on my top, and it has stayed there ever since. And fuck you, Academy, for not putting it on the shortlist. Because what the hell? Make it make sense. Why is it not on the shortlist? Why is it not going to be nominated for Best International Feature? I don't understand. Anyways, so that's my list. Those are my top 10 films of the year.
Next up, Juan, take us away.
Okay, as of this recording, my list is not finalized for my top films of the year. If things change by the time this episode is uploaded, I will not apologize. Because this is difficult, okay? This is pretty freaking difficult. And I'm sure a couple of these choices can get me kicked off of film Twitter, and that's fine. I accept my fate. So, number 10, for me, for nostalgia purposes, was straight out of nowhere, Scooby-Doo meets Courage the Cowardly Dog. And I'm being dead-ass serious. Yes, this was a 5 out of 5 for me. I am a fan of both Scooby-Doo and Courage the Cowardly Dog. I was really looking forward to it. I loved it. It was a hysterical riot. It made my Saturday morning cartoon-loving ass really nostalgic and extremely happy. It's the collab you always wanted to see, and it combines the magic that makes both properties so special. If you can have fun with a movie and enjoy cartoons without scrutinizing details, this is your kind of film, especially if you love those properties. Number 9. A film I know is on many people's worst of the year list, and I'm just going to ignore it, is Space Jam: A New Legacy. My 5 out of 5 rating will not change for this film. I adore this film. I thought it was great. It was... See, Anna, this is camp, if you're talking about Malignant. This was fun. I enjoyed myself. I know it was a lot of stuff, but you know what? I vibed with it. I enjoyed it. I've seen it 3 times. I just had fun with it. I didn't go into scrutinizing so many details and criticizing this and criticizing that. Remember when you can just enjoy a movie for having fun? That's what this was to me. And I have a friend who enjoyed it. So you know what? I know I'm not insane. That's great there. Gabriela, your brother enjoyed this film. So you know what? There's just an audience for it.
He watched it and he came back and said that the scene where LeBron dunked the ball at the end was cinema.
I'm not going to disagree with it.
You know, my brother just watched it because it's LeBron James. And I have mentioned before that my brother is the biggest LeBron James fan. So...
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by his reaction at all.
That's going to be his best film of 2021.
It probably is.
Honestly, he's going to validate
my feeling. No, I think it's Spider-Man. I think it's Spider-Man and then Space Jam.
If it is, you can rub into his face that he finally put LeBron in second place. There you go. Some fun blackmail for you.
Who knows?
Listen, I enjoyed this film. I really, really did. If this isn't for you, I'm sorry for you that you can't vibe with this film, but this is just my cup of tea. And now, number 8, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Josie said it. This is a fantastic comedy. It's a fantastic comedy. It's one of the hardest I've laughed throughout the year. And really, it's fun. It's camp. You can just vibe with it, enjoy it. I mean, Edgar's Prayer. You're going to tell me Edgar's Prayer deserved less than a 5-star rating?
Edgar's Prayer won Best Song at the Film Poser Awards.
And Josie's right. This should be nominated for Best Picture. There's no doubt about it. Y'all can nominate Bridesmaids. You know what? Nominate Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Take a chance, Academy. Do something fun for your ratings, like raise them. Include films that people actually enjoy. Just saying. So yeah, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. If you haven't seen it, just go with it. You don't even have to watch a trailer. Just enjoy yourself. It's comic. It's stupid, but it's enjoyable. And it's just something that you're like, I don't know what the fuck this is at first, but I enjoyed it. Honestly. So much fun. Next up at number 7, Shiva Baby, which is another film I loved this year, which I watched thanks to Josie and her recommendation. I adored this film. I thought that was amazing. It's something, it's one of those films that you're just surprised when you watch it and you love it even more on a rewatch. And you just find new things to appreciate about it each time. I mean, it's Bisexual Chaos, the movie. It's Booksmart meets a score that featured the violins that played during the trailer of Mothered from Jennifer Lawrence and Jewish Cheeseman. What else do you need? It's fun. It's 77 minutes, and it doesn't even feel like 78 minutes, quite frankly. And that's how great it is. You're like, this was only this long? This does better than a lot of films that use 2.5 hours to talk their shit. Be more like Shiva Baby. Get your plot points across quicker and more enjoyable. Another film I own the Blu-ray for. Thank you for Christmas. Number 6 is Willy's Wonderland by Nicolas Cage.
I am not surprised at all.
For the agenda.
For the agenda, siempre. Look, it's Nicolas Cage beating the shit out of animatronics and vibing. It's a fun and wild ride. You know what this film just needed to deliver? Nicolas Cage beating up animatronics. You know what it did? That. Nicolas Cage having more impact than some of your favorite actors without having any lines in the movie. You know what that's called? Talent. Talento. It was fun. I enjoyed myself. I've never played Five Nights at Freddy or read the books that apparently exist. But you know what? I consider this a better adaptation. I just had fun with it. It's just something you can enjoy as a horror film, like during Halloween or something like that, where you're like, it's one of those films you get with a group of friends and you're like, I'm not going to probably love this for some people, but I'm still going to have fun with it because that's what life is about. Fun, not always finding what's poetic cinema. Look for fun in your lives, people. It's a lot easier that way. Also, Unhinged Cage. Unhinged. Anna, join me here. You got to help me out here.
Unhinged Cage is the best Cage, period.
I mean, he really goes all out here. Not going to lie. Number 5 is a film I don't see a lot of people talking about, but that's okay because I'm here to support it. Is Till Death, starring Megan Fox. After a romantic evening at their scheduled lake house, a woman wakes up handcuffed to her dead husband. Trapped and isolated in the dead of winter, she must fight off hired killers to escape her late spouse's twisted plan. Listen, you remember Gerald's Game? Okay, well, this is done correctly and better. First off, Megan Fox. Queen Megan, you've done it again, constantly raising the bar and doing it flawlessly. I just find it hysterical. Like, have men not learned by watching Jennifer's Body that you do not underestimate Megan Fox in these films? Like, come on. No one does their homework anymore. Like, the Megan Fox killing men cinematic universe, that's beautiful to me. I once read a Letterboxd review that says, gonna tell my kids this was Home Alone. And you know what? I might do the same. It's great. I enjoyed it. I gave it a 5 out of 5 on my 3rd rewatch. Sue me. I don't care. It's not gonna happen. It's great for me. Number 4. This is gonna be an unpopular opinion with the posers. Malcolm and Marie.
Damn, that was this year?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I don't even know where it is on my list at this point.
Me neither. It's lost. Oh my god, it's been a long year.
It's been long, but you know what? I love this film. Zendaya was amazing. She was robbed. Speaking of the Academy, let's bring you back into this. How dare you rob Zendaya for Malcolm and Marie? How dare you? She gave it her all. She broke her back, and y'all don't acknowledge her. Falta respeto. Clearly, we need new voting members because they are not recognizing the talent that is out there.
If I'm not mistaken, she won the Film Poser Award for Best Actress.
Because we're the ones with taste. Honestly, it's fun. It's an electric film. I really enjoyed it from Netflix. I used it to write a paper for one of my classes. I just really enjoyed this film. I know a lot of people say it's a toxic film, but you know what? You can argue both sides with that film. I personally enjoyed it. It's a heavy film to watch, not gonna lie. But oh, I just enjoyed it. My number three is Coda. Was not expecting to make it into my top 10 of the year.
I am very surprised, but I love the Coda representation.
I you know what it happened? So I was watching on Apple TV Plus. I did a double feature, which I regret doing this double feature because emotionally I don't know what caused me to do this. But I watched Coda and then I watched Finch same day.
Oh my god.
Not a fun time. Don't be me. One day one day the other. That is just an emotional train wreck. But Coda, it's a film I didn't expect to love, but it has it all. It's a beautiful story. It has heart. It has emotions. It has humor. It has great representation for the deaf community. I laughed. I cried. And it really got me during those feel-good and emotional moments. When the Oscars come around, I truly think that Coda has to be in the Best Picture conversation. It's just a wonderful film that reminds you of the films in the past that could truly show you it. You can have it all in a film. The comedy, the drama, the heart. You feel the tears coming down your face. It's not sometimes what Pixar used to do of we're going to make you cry just to make you cry. No, it earns those tears. Highly recommend this one if you haven't watched this. Bring tissues. And also, best original song, Coda needs to be in that conversation también.
But it's definitely getting a Best Picture nomination. Mark my words.
Yes.
All right.
Manifesting.
Manifesting.
Yeah, okay. Ever since we saw it at Sundance, I was like, this is a Best Picture.
Yes.
Ugh, yeah.
Such a good movie.
I put off watching it for a while. But then when I got to it, I was like, ah, I understand why they bought it for so much. There's a lot of potential here. I just wish it would be at that height of the conversation as so many other films are. Like, I sometimes feel like people forget about Coda. And that shouldn't be the case. Like, just because Apple TV isn't accessible to everyone or is not the most well-used service, like, it's not the Netflix, it's not the HBO Max, doesn't mean you shouldn't give it a chance. My second favorite film of the year, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings. Cinema. Fantastic. Love it. I cheered every time I watched that movie. It is sensational. Tony Leung's performance. Come on now.
Ah, Tony Leung. Still thinking about him.
It's that film. The dope issues are coming back for Gabriela.
Damn.
I can fix him.
Honestly, though, it was one of those films I watched in the theater, and I was like, this is the kind of film pre-pandemic that you ran to see. And it's so beautiful. It's fantastic. It's one of those films where you actually were like, whoa, so this is what Marvel can do. More of this, because I just enjoyed it. It's perfect to me. And finally, my number one film is Spider-Man No Way Home. I want to see it in the theaters. I really want to go back and see it. I loved it. It gave me everything I wanted. It is exactly what I want out of a Spider-Man film. It's my favorite Spider-Man movie to date. It just reminded me of my love for the character. I laughed. I cried. I cheered loudly with my audience. It is my favorite movie experience of the year. Spider-Man No Way Home was proof to me that Marvel can be at their A game without feeling like a cash grab. Same with Eternal. Same with Shang-Chi. Those three films showed me that Marvel has what it takes. But they need to start working back towards it. Because for a while, it felt like, oh, let's build up to this film. You can do it. Spider-Man is literally the first pandemic film to reach $1 billion. Because you gave people what they wanted as fan service while giving us a really good story. Se puede hacer. No puede ser bien vago. You know? I'm going to add some sabor for our listeners. Read in Spanish and in English because I'm what? Bilingual. Those are my favorite films of 2021. You are probably going to see Scream as my number one film of 2022. Just letting you know as of now. Don't worry about it. And let's move on.
You're already shining that number one spot to be claimed on on January 14th.
January 13th, baby. That is the 13th. First day I'm going. She will have her throne that day. Her her crown is being polished. It's at the shop.
Anna, take us away.
Okay, so quickly, I'm going to start with my honorable mentions. First up is The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. I loved it. Juan saw me that I fully enjoy the film. It was a good experience for me. The next one is Malignant. Yes, it is the definition of camp. I'm gonna defend this movie. Okay, I don't care.
Oh my god.
And the last honorable mention is Paw Patrol the movie. Because you know what? Paw Patrol is amazing. It has rice, okay?
No. I love it. I love it.
Y'all should watch Paw Patrol. Now, going into my list, again, I am a very indecisive person, so I don't have top per se. It's just a list of films that I really like throughout the year, and I don't want to like categorize them. First up, Green Knight. What can I say? Dave Patel, amazing. The cinematography, chef's kiss. I loved it. Not gonna lie, I went back to the soundtrack of this movie.
It slaps.
It slaps.
It slaps. It's a great soundtrack.
It is. It's a vibe.
We were blessed this year with movie soundtracks, honestly.
When it comes to this one and Encanto, I went back a lot with the soundtrack. The ending, I really liked it. I vibe with it.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful ending. Now, next movie, Coda. Not gonna lie, I teared up in the last scene of that movie. It is amazing. It is so sweet. It is funny. I laughed. I cried. I liked it. And I hope it gets more recognition in award season. Next up is Pig. What can I say? It stars Nicolas Cage. Our king. It is our agenda. And he gave it everything on this movie. Such an impactful performance. And I loved it. Next one. Spider-Man. No Way Home. Man. What can you expect? Okay? It is a great movie. I enjoyed it. I really liked my experience in the theater. Watching it. I cheered. I screamed. I laughed. I enjoyed it a lot. And just see all those three Spider-Mans together. You know what? What can I say? It was amazing. Now, next movie. It is On the Count of Three.
Yes. Yes.
Sadly, not many people haven't seen this movie because it was only... it premiered at Sundance.
Yeah.
And it was picked by a distributor, but it still doesn't have a release date. But what can I say about this film? I love the dark humor in it.
It's a great film.
It's a great film. It is sad, though. And
it's very
sad. It's very sad, but I just like the balance between the drama, the humor, and it is great. And I hope it gets a release date soon. Now I'm going to my other five films. Starting up with, I'm going to switch it up to Spanish. Okay, gente, ya ustedes saben la película que voy a hablar.
¡Vamos allá!
Y tiene que ser la película del año. Y es Zack Enfrentamiento Mortal.
¡Yes!
Esa película...
¡Zack Enfrentamiento Mortal!
Esa película fue una experiencia religiosa, mi gente, ¿ok? Porque ver esa película en una sala llena, that was amazing. Yo grité, yo me reí, yo aplaudí. ¿Qué tú más esperabas de esa película? Hay tantas cosas que tengo que decir de esta película porque so many things happen here que no lo puedes explicar lo que pasa, but it just makes sense in the movie, okay? ¿Cómo es que un nene está jugando soccer en la milla de oro? No sé. No sé. Pero está pasando, ¿ok? Y props to el director Joseph Lando. That boy literally produced, directed, and started it. ¿Qué más tú puedes decir de esta película? Amén. Una experiencia religiosa, sobrenatural, que yo necesito que más gente vea esta película. Ahora, switch it back to, again. Now. Next movie is A Quiet Place Part 2. So, this movie is one of those movies where you think the second one cannot, like, outdid the first one, but it does. John Krasinski truly did outdid himself in this one. It is nail-biting. It is action-packed. And it is intense. It is thrilling. And I loved it. And that last scene of the film, Chef's Kiss, the sound design, amazing. It, honestly, yes. it was a good experience on the theater. Next movie. You know what? I don't think not many people are going to have it on their list. But I truly appreciated this one. And it is Ghostbusters Afterlife. I really liked that film. I enjoyed it a lot. I laughed. The performances by McKenna Grace, she did amazing. It is very nostalgic. People in my theater were crying. And it is a really enjoyed film. If you want to have a good time, go watch Ghostbusters Afterlife. Penúltima. So, it is Demon Slayer Mugen Train. Man, I cried in this movie. The fact that you guys were... Backstory. I was buying the tickets with the posters in the chat and my frustration of trying to buy the tickets before it got sold out. And it did. It sold out for a week, this damn film in Puerto Rico, okay?
But you got to watch it.
I finally got to watch it. It was amazing. The animation, chef's kiss. How dare they make me love a character and then kill them. How fucking dare they, okay? I'ma send my therapy bill to the animation studio. Damn, they really did outdid themselves on this one. And now season 2 is here, and for those that need to watch season 2, they need to watch the movie first, and it is amazing. Okay, so last film. It was already mentioned on this episode, but I'm gonna mention it again, and it is Shiva Baby.
Oh my gosh.
Mira, the amount of stress that this film gave to me. It was a lot, but I still liked it either way. The thrill, the story, just when you thought it couldn't get worse, it gets worse. The soundtrack, mira. And I remember in one episode that Josie was like, I think Anna is going to like this movie. And you know what? You're right. You're right. It's in my top films of this year.
It's a great film.
It is.
It's
a great film. Okay. And yes, I love Uncut Gems. And I was like, I knew I was going to like this one. And I did.
Ah, Uncut Gems.
This movie breaks on like a cold sweat.
Yeah.
Tú me veías en Shiva Baby con las manos en mi frente. Okay. I was like, no puede ser. And it happens. Esa última escena. With the lady, like, when she has her phone, mira, bye. Me dio algo. But in conclusion, I really like this film.
And those were all our top 10s and 5 worst films of the year. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and we like also let us know what your top 10 of the year is. When this episode goes up, when you're listening to it, we'll probably tweet about it. Reply in the comments. Screenshot your letterbox top 10. Let us know so we can judge you. Not really.
Respectfully.
Respectfully judge you.
So... that's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
You can find me on Instagram and on Twitter as Anna_Sofia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sofia.
And you can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me at The Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.